Hello and welcome to a special edition of Women's Soccer Zone. My name is Kieran Tatham, and joining me from across the pond on this occasion, JJ, in the two previous years for the NWSL College Draft, we've been in each other's company, but I've let the side down. I'm in London, you're in a very, very freezing Philadelphia. How are you, mate?
Yeah, it was a little disappointing, mate. I know a lot of people were upset, or sad, I guess, that you weren't here, but no doubt your contributions still were very much needed because you were able to bail me out doing all the social media work so I can work with the chaos of draft day. But Kieran, I am good. I am tired. But let's break this one down, shall we?
Yeah, well, let's start there, shall we? I mean, we're going to talk about a trade that took place before the draft, but I think we always like to paint a nice picture of what it's like. You mentioned chaos. I've seen it for myself the last couple of years. What was it like today in Philly? You mentioned to me yesterday when you arrived in Philadelphia how enormous the convention center is compared to the two that I've been to in Los Angeles and Baltimore. But talk about the actual college draft day today. What was it like? What was going on? Media presence, that sort of stuff.
Well, you know, I give credit, obviously, a big ballroom that they put the draft in. It's the same one that they're going to use for the Major League Soccer draft on Friday. In the room, my friend, was full, which is great to see. Obviously, Sky Blue supporters, Washington Spirit supporters, both made separate caravans from their locations to draft day, which obviously it's fair play to them because, remember, this is a Thursday morning. It's in the middle of the work week. So they took out their personal time to be here. So big credit to them. Obviously, with this being at the start of the now United Soccer Coaches Convention, just had to make sure I got that right, as opposed to the old five-letter acronym of this convention. A lot of people obviously stopping in and out. Got to see a lot of former players popping in. I saw Lori Lindsay popped in for a little while. Obviously, some players that are now coaching, Brianna Scurry, obviously made an appearance amongst a few others. So it's good to see a lot of former players check it out. Obviously, some younger players coming through the high school and collegiate ranks, stopping by to see it out. So good atmosphere, good vibe. If you saw on my social media, gave a big plus to the DJ or whoever was running the playlist. Very, very solid tone-setting music that was going on, so all good. It was definitely a scene and a stage worth for this draft.
Awesome. Yeah, I could listen to the music through the stream. I second what you say. Some good tunes coming through my speakers. But you mentioned former players that were there. There was also some current players that were there as well. Christy Mewis appeared on the stream for a little bit, as did Yael Leverbuchen. Yael was also involved in, I think it was the second round or third round of the draft, announcing some of the picks. And actually, Yael was the subject of quite a lot of attention just before the draft kicked off, because Yael will not be playing in Utah with the Utah Royals. She will be playing with the Seattle Reign, because a trade was made just before the draft kicked off, which saw Yael Leverbuch go to Seattle to join former head coach at FC Kansas City, Vlatko Andonovski. And in the other direction was going Diana Matheson, the Canadian international, who Laura Harvey had obtained from the Washington Spirit last year. But Diana suffered a bad knee injury just before the season started and didn't kick a ball for Seattle. So that one got people talking straight away. But unfortunately, it wasn't quite communicated to you guys in the press box in Philly, was it?
No, it wasn't. The gantry was pretty confused because we saw Amanda Duffy, the managing director of operations for the league, going through the introductory speak at about 10:20 a.m. local time. And then all of a sudden, we looked down on social media. Oh, there was a trade that happened. So, yeah, it took us a little by surprise. And I guess in fairness, I think actually this is my opinion, doesn't speak for anything else. They did announce the trade, but at the trade when the pick happened, because also Utah sent the 25th pick to Seattle. So I think the information was announced maybe perhaps a little bit too early. I think they're supposed to perhaps wait on that one. But either way, yeah, it took us all a little by surprise. Everyone at home knew, but we didn't.
The one advantage of watching it through the stream on this occasion, mate. But what did you make of that trade? I actually think, you know, Diana Matheson, we know what she's capable of when she's fit. As we said, coming off of a bad injury that meant she missed the whole of the 2017 season. But I kind of feel that Seattle have got a really good deal in that one, because they gained a draft pick and they gained what I described on social media as one of the most underrated players in the league for me. I thought Yael, especially at FC Kansas City, really showed what an asset she can be. Obviously, she joined that team as a centre midfielder, but actually it was playing alongside Becky Sauerbrunn where she really came into her own and established herself as a really important member of that team. But what did you make of the trade and as an overall when you heard about it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. You know, Yael Averbuch might be one of the most technically gifted players in the league, especially because she happens to be one of the taller players in the league as well. So she's very sound when the ball's at her feet, but transition well to almost a makeshift center back. But now going on 2 years now that she's played that position, she's handled the challenges in stride. And obviously when you're partnering with one of the best center backs in the world with Becky Sauerbrunn, you obviously learn a lot in addition to what you have as your own talent. So she brings versatility to Seattle because she can not only play through the spine defensively into the midfield, but if needed, always you could put her out wide or even be someone that could play underneath the strikers because she's got a worldie of a left foot. So yeah, a lot of different things she could bring to the table. And then on the other side, for Utah, as you said, Dina Mathison on her day can be world-class. She can slow the tempo down. She can pick it up when she wants to. She can hit that killer ball. She can be that buzzing bee around the midfield for 90 minutes or more, obviously. We've seen that on the international stage for Canada. So, yeah, it's kind of equal in the sense of personnel. I don't know much, in fairness, to Allison Horan of Wake Forest, who was that draft pick, the corresponding one that went to Seattle. But, yeah, I'm with you. If there is an edge to be given, it's going to go to the Rain.
Yeah, I agree. But it will be nice to see Dina Mathison paired with Desiree Scott. Obviously, she's committed to the Utah Royals in the last week. But let's talk about the draft. And one of the big talking points coming into it was the number one pick, obviously, as it always is. The Washington Spirit owned it. Andy Sullivan was expected to go at number one, but she left it very, very late to declare her availability, didn't she? And she did eventually declare. Unsurprisingly, the Washington Spirit selected her. We're going to talk about the Spirit in more detail as this podcast goes on, because I think in total they had 7 picks on the day. So it almost felt like they were on the stage longer than anyone else, and they might as well have stayed up there at times. But Andy Sullivan going to the Washington Spirit, she'll be playing alongside the likes of Megan Dougherty-Howard, who was a real standout last year, having been picked a bit further down the draft in 2017. The likes of Mal Pugh, who obviously came in after deciding not to go through her career at college. Talk about Andy's influence that she'll have on that teammate, because I know that she's very highly thought of, isn't she?
Yeah, I mean, you know, her in a combination with Rebecca Quinn getting picked in the number 3 spot, I mean, that solidifies what I like to call the spine of the field, you know, right down the middle, because Sullivan, she can play, obviously, as your just prototypical center midfielder. She can go higher up as an attacking center midfielder. She can even drop back a little bit further if you need a little bit of help there. I mean, she, for the longest time, we knew, Kieran, that she was probably the most gifted player on the ball that the U.S. has seen in quite a long time on the women's side. I mean, her composure at, 17 years old, was out of this world. And she has translated that, obviously, to a very successful collegiate career. Obviously had bumps with injuries along the way. But still, when you're getting called into the national team in your sophomore and junior years, the full national team, that is, you're doing something right. And not to jump the gun a little bit, but I did mention about that number 3 pick as well with Rebecca Quinn. This is a player that has been starting for Canada for, you know, a fair number of years right now. And she can play as your standard center back. She can play as a holding midfielder. And even if when you need her to play as that traditional midfielder in the center of the park, she can do that as well. So, you know, you talk about Maggie Dougherty-Howard. They're now going to be alongside with Sullivan. You're going to have Pugh playing either above or up top or out wide with that group. Then you're going to have Quinn in the back. I mean, that is going to be a very tough team to break down through the middle of the park. And I think Washington, once they knew that Sullivan was good to go, they were like, okay, so our plan is pretty much going to be get these two players, and then we're going to go from there. And they did exactly that.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually had an opportunity to watch a bit of her when I was out in the States at the end of last year. She played against, I think she played against South Korea in one of the matches or both the matches, I can't remember. But yeah, seen her a few times myself, watched her in the NCAA College Cup as well. And as you say, very composed on the ball. We had a chance to speak to her ahead of the draft under embargo. And, you know, she spoke about where she needs to improve. She spoke about the fact that she wanted to take some time out before the draft took place. And that's why she didn't declare until last minute. But unfortunately, she wasn't there at the draft. Obviously, she's with the US Women's National Team in their January camp at the moment. But there is an article on the Women's Soccer Zone website. So if you go to womenssoccerzone.com, you can actually read some reaction from Andy Sullivan on being drafted and on being selected as the number one overall pick. You mentioned Rebecca Quinn, probably should kind of mention her, as you say, been in the Canadian team for a little while, won an Olympic bronze medal in Rio in 2016. I completely agree with you. I think those two are really going to complement each other. And of course, we haven't had a chance to speak about it yet, JJ, but these aren't the only players that are coming into Washington, are they? Because, of course, they had a trade with the North Carolina Courage in the week, and they've got two very good players in Taylor Smith and Ashley Hatch coming in as well.
Yeah, I mean, that team, and I know a lot of people are upset giving up the rights to Crystal Dunn. I mean, that is a world-class player. You cannot replace a Crystal Dunn on a team, even though, granted, she hasn't been there for a little while. But let's face it, in her couple of seasons with that team, she was very, very good. But what they get in return, in combination with the draft picks, because they got a couple of very good ones, and we'll talk about that later on, but Ashley Hatch, who I am very high on, is probably one of the best young forwards that we have seen in quite a long time. Her work rate is phenomenal. Her nose for the goal is probably second to none, and she's only getting better at, what, 22, 23 years old? So watch out for her. And I think Taylor Smith, I mean, it's still funny to think that she was an undrafted player out of UCLA, winds up in Western New York, basically walking onto the team, and then she's a starting outside back for the U.S. national team. That is a product of this system, of this league, because she's getting in matches week in, week out, improving her game. And now Washington has got themselves a worldie of an outside back who can add to an attack for Washington, which, quite frankly, could use a lot of help.
Yeah, absolutely. And another team that could use a lot of help up front is the Boston Breakers. And they had the number two overall pick, and they went with South Carolina's Savannah McCaskill. Now, that was another team and another college that did very well in the NCAA this year. I haven't seen much of Savannah McCaskill, JJ, so you're going to have to give me some insight on in that one, because we saw last year that the Breakers rely a lot on Tash Dowie. How much of a help is Savannah McCaskill going to be to the Breakers and Tash Dowie?
Yeah, she's going to be a big help. I mean, she's one of those bullish type forwards that is not afraid to run at the defenders, try to create a little chaos, has got a good finishing touch, and can score from outside the box, just inside, can be a fox in the box when you need to. I mean, she's one of those players that, yeah, I said fearless. I mean, she strikes that to a T. That SEC conference has gotten to be very physical over the years, and you really have to grind out some ball games down there, and she is an epitome of that. And she is one of many reasons why South Carolina was a good team to becoming contenders for not only a conference title, but for a national title in the past couple of years. And, you know, I think right now, Boston, they've got a good one. I question a little bit, Kieran, as to where exactly she is going to fit in that Beard system. I'm not doubting the pick. I'm just curious if it's going to go to maybe a three up front with maybe one sitting up high and then two below, which is, I think, maybe a little bit better for McCaskill. They're going to go with a flat three, or they're just going to go with a flat two. So that's the things that I'm a little curious about. But obviously, that will come in due time with a preseason only just a couple of weeks away.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it'll be interesting to see how she fits into that Boston team, because they definitely need some more firepower, and they will definitely be pinning a lot of hopes on her. Last year, JJ, I was listening back to the podcast that we did after the draft in 2017, and I think it was the very first time that every single player in the first round was actually present at the convention and available to for interview and available to go up and get their team scarf and things like that. This year, the only player from the first round that was available and actually at the convention centre was Imani Dorsey, who was selected at number 5 by Sky Blue FC. Now, she will join Michaela Obam, who was selected by Sky Blue as well out of West Virginia. Talk about those couple of players, mate. We're going to have some audio from Imani Dorsey in a second, but talk about the impact that those two players can have.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Sky Blue did very well in this draft overall. They had a lot of different holes to fill. Obviously, one of the leakiest defenses in the league, so they had to go look for a few defenders. Dorsey is a very solid player. She can facilitate. She can score goals. She was the ACC Offensive Player of the Year this year, first team All-American, ranked probably as one of your top 15 overall players in the NCAA, and that's combining all four classes, not just the senior class alone. Tough to defend. Another one of those players that's very tough to defend, very athletic. But she, amongst, you'll hear the University Duke being named a lot here throughout the day. She is one of the many reasons why that program has gotten to 2 college cups in the last 4 years, because they're getting results day in and day out. And when Sky Blue is getting a player that scored close to 30 goals in her career, nearly half of those coming this past year alone, you have someone that's coming in right at the prime of her career.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, we mentioned that we've got audio from Imani Dorsey, so we should hear from her about being drafted by Sky Blue FC.
How does it feel to be drafted?
So cool. I was anxious. Like, my coaches were telling me, you'll probably go here, you'll probably go, like, just a sort. But to hear my name called and have my family right next to me was really a really special moment.
So really driving up from 2:30 in the morning to get here. How did that plan come about?
Okay, so it's, like, snowing in Durham right now, and my flight got canceled. So then I booked another flight, and that got canceled. I booked another flight, that got moved to, like, 10 today. So my assistant coach, Irwin, was like, hey, like, I'm still here, like, let's drive. And the conditions in North Carolina were very scary, but we're like, you know what, like, let's get to Virginia, and it'll be good. And it was smooth sailing the rest of the way, so I'm really happy to be here.
Duke has had a very good pedigree of having players in this league. Have you had a chance to talk with some of your former teammates?
Yeah.
What they told you?
Like, the fact that I'm going to Sky Blue and being able to play with my former teammate, Christina Gibbons, is, like, makes me so happy. Like, when I heard that she was going there, I instantly texted her and was like, we are going to be on the same team and this is going to be hype, because I love being to play with players that I know and I can get, like, more of a feel for. And since we have that history and that connection, I'm really excited about that.
What do you think about getting a chance to play on the same team as Sam Kerr, maybe even next to her?
That is awesome. Like, I'm a player that loves to combine and loves to find different ways to beat defenders, and so playing off of someone like Sam Kerr and, like, finding her in the box is a dream come true. And as a rookie, like, that's awesome. Yeah.
You mentioned that you were dreaming of this moment, or you couldn't dream of this moment when you were 5 years old. What were some of the first things you enjoyed about soccer in your youth career?
Shooting, scoring. Shooting and scoring as a forward. No, but definitely, like, having my friends around me and enjoying that. And since from a young age, like, I'm a pretty mellow person, but, like, when I get on the field and I'm able to compete, like, it's a new side of me, and I've always loved that.
So that was Imani Dorsey. JJ, now the number 6 pick was one that created the biggest talking point of the day, and that was Amandine Pierre-Louis. Now, it wasn't the fact that it was Amandine that was selected at number 6, it was the fact that Sky Blue traded for that number 6 pick, or they were involved in a trade that saw them get that number 6 pick. That number 6 pick belonged to the Houston Dash. Now, the Houston Dash traded their number 6 pick and gave it to the Chicago Red Stars, who got the Dash's number 7 pick. Now, I'm not going to go into all of the finer details of the trade, because even when it's written down in front of me, it still makes you very, very confused. But the long and short of it is that there was, very early on in the day, there was a 3-way trade that took place between Sky Blue FC, the Chicago Red Stars, and the Houston Dash. And what that has seen is a number of high profile players going in different directions. Now, there is nothing confirmed at the time of recording, but there are some big names that are being proposed and look likely to move in different directions. The floor is yours, my friend. You take it away.
Well, I think we can kind of both chime in on this, because it's funny, you and I were in communication with each other throughout the draft. Everyone is speculating, all right, so we've got what, two players going from Houston to Chicago for a player, then all of a sudden three players now going to Sky Blue for two players, and it's like, okay, so who exactly is going to be fitting the bill here, right? So it starts off with, at least what we're understanding, Kristen Press is going to be going from Chicago to Houston. And again, Kieran, stop me at any point, because like you said, the math is so confusing that I might be saying the right names or going to the wrong team.
You're right. You're right from the off. Kristen Press to Houston Dash is likely.
Okay,
yes.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
We're understanding that the players that are going to be going to, or excuse me, that are going to be going to Chicago, one of those is going to be Sam Kerr. I think you have the other one correct, which is
Nicky Stanton, is our understanding. John Halloran tweeted out Kerr and Stanton a little bit earlier on this evening, my time. So it looks like it is going to be Sam Kerr and Nicky Stanton going over to Chicago. Obviously, nothing confirmed yet, but Sky Blue can't lose out either, mate. So who's going there?
Well, I mean, this is the big shocker of them all, isn't it? Carly Lloyd is coming home. She is going to Sky Blue. The Delran, New Jersey native is going to be moving from Houston to New Jersey to play with Sky Blue. And also Janine Becky is going to be moving as well. So, yeah.
I mean, in terms of trades that have taken place during a draft, JJ, I'm putting you a little bit on the spot. Can you think off the top of your head of a bigger trade that's taken place that potentially involves that number of players that are so high caliber?
Well, it's funny because if you go onto the Women's Soccer Zone website, in my draft outlook, I put in a little bit about we have a trade to make. Now, it's frequent that we see trades happening with pick for pick. There have only been, of all the years, six trades that have involved players. None came last year, and all involved the Portland Thorns. And ironically enough, the Thorns, they did make a trade. They traded up to get Chicago's 29th overall pick, but they were relatively quiet on the day. So to answer your question in context to this day on draft day, no, we've never seen a trade like that. In terms of a blockbuster, I mean, we're just going one after the other in big trades that's happening in this league. It starts obviously with the O'Hara, Lytle to Utah, Gibbons and Groom coming to Sky Blue. Then obviously we had what we got this morning. That comes off the back of the Crystal Dunn that, you know, moving to North Carolina, who we didn't even think was going to be coming back to the U.S., and Hatch and Smith go up north. And then this, I mean, it's kind of one of those, they say in baseball, this is hot stove season, where all the rumors just continue to get warmer and warmer on the burner and the surface. Yeah, this is exactly women's soccer hot stove season for you right now. All the rumors are flying. And again, at time of recording, nothing has been confirmed. But this, you know, we've heard from a number of sources that this is exactly what's going to happen. So it's absolutely insane right now.
It's crazy, isn't it? I think a few weeks ago, we were all complaining that nothing was happening in the off season. And then boom, it all kind of happens in the space of a few weeks. But crazy times. And actually, I think what we should do is go for a little break, let people digest all of that news, and we'll have a little bit of a look at the second round, because we're not going to do team by team or player by player, because the draft takes nearly 4 hours. I think if we did that, this would probably be close to 4 hours as well. So we'll have a break and we'll come back and have a little chat about the second round.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
So, JJ, the 11th pick, which is the first round, or the first pick of the second round, was held again by the Washington Spirit. It was another Duke University product, and it was Skylar DeBray. And I know you had a chance to speak to her, and you were impressed with what she said and what she might be able to bring to the team.
Yeah, I mean, this is a composed kid, you know. She's someone that can handle things at the back, can stymie out a lot of attacks, reads the game really well, and I said it back in our last segment, Rebecca Quinn, I mean, this is a player that kind of plays with her head, you know, two steps ahead of everybody else, kind of like that chess master, you know, knows how to read a game better than others, can launch their own counters. I mean, this is, it's a composed candidate back there. And Duke has been very, very successful under Robbie Church for, well, a number of years. In fact, you and I were talking before the recording that they currently lead now all schools with most drafted players in the NWSL with 14, I think it was at last count. I mean, that says a lot about the program and the type of players that are coming into it, because, you know, you're recruiting at a college level 17, 18-year-olds, and then you have 4 years to work with them, and then they're becoming mature athletes who can read games like years and eons above where they were when they came in. So, you know, Duke, they dominated the day. And Dubray, amongst others, you know, there's reasons why that they got picked on this day, because they had a strong senior class and they had a lot of success and a lot of awards behind them.
Well, let's hear from Skylar Dubray. You managed to catch up with her, have a chat after she was drafted by the Washington Spirit. So here she is.
How does it feel to be drafted?
It's so surreal. This is, yeah, amazing. Yeah, going 11th pick, like coming in this year, I don't think I would have said that confidently, you know, I was going to be first in the second round, but luckily Duke had an amazing year. So much thanks to my teammates and coaches, and I think that's what made it possible. So,
what can you take away from your experience at Duke as you go into Washington?
I think my experience at Duke, I don't know, that I, like...
Just kind of shadow her.
It's, yeah. My experience at Duke was just all around... It was perfect in so many ways, but it was also a battle. And so, like, I tore my ACL, wasn't always a consistent starter, so I think taught me a lot about being able to battle through some of the difficulties.
Can you talk about playing with Quinn? Now you're going to be on the same pro team together.
Yeah.
What that's going to be like for you?
Oh, I'm so happy, because especially this year I've gotten a lot closer to her, and she's become one of my closest friends, and I love her dearly. And she is one of probably the best player I've ever played with. Certainly up there. So excited to play with her.
Your group made it to a couple college cups and a lot of big matches. What have you taken from those experiences that might help you in this league?
Yeah, just confidence that I can play on the biggest stage and play against the top players in the nation. Obviously, it's a whole nother level with professional players, but I'm so excited for the challenge.
What's been your greatest challenge so far?
That's a good question. No, I think, I mean, coming back from an ACL tear, that's an easy answer. Definitely huge to come back from. Such a common injury. So many people do it, but it's still a tough path back.
What about when you were young, when you were a youth player? Did you think you'd get to this point today?
Yeah, I always kind of felt that I did. I never thought too much about it, but it always kind of seemed like the natural path for me.
A lot of Duke players selected today. I'm wondering how much has this day been a topic of conversation for you guys?
A bit. I mean, you see that Amani's here. I'm here also with two other teammates, Izzy and Morgan. So we kind of made it like a fun class trip for us. And the talk has mainly been about being in Philadelphia together and this weekend. And it's been less about the order of the draft picks. I think all of our personalities are more of like we get anxious if we worry too much about it. So we've just kind of wanted to have fun with it.
What was it like sitting out there for about an hour, I guess?
Yeah, it felt like it took forever, but I have my mom here and we were just chatting and just trying to stay calm. But it's so cool. It's so surreal to be in the space. They did such a good job with the event.
So that was Skylar Dubray, obviously very happy to be drafted into the NWSL with the Washington Spirit. JJ, was there any other players that stood out for you in the second round?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about Chicago a lot, obviously. They had over a half dozen picks on the day. They had three in the second round. Emily Boyd was brought in, solid keeper, Pac-12 keeper of the year out of Cal Berkeley. Indigo Gibson, actually pretty much her partner in crime right in front of her, is one of the center backs. An All-American there was solid. And then the Red Stars also stayed left coast, went down to Pepperdine, and got Brianna Vasali. And now I had a chance to talk with Vasali for a little bit, and she's one of those players that gave a phenomenal response to this question. I didn't have a chance to ask it to anyone else prior to, but this class, Kieran, is a class that this league was starting when these players were in high school. Every year before, it was, you know, kind of halfway through their college career, maybe a little bit on the early stages, but these players have had a long time now to watch this league, to follow what's going on, to understand kind of the identities. And this is a player in Vasali who not only had a phenomenal season this year, she's an attacking midfielder but can play up front when needed, was a player of the year in the West Coast Conference, two times first team, second team All-American, had 14 goals this year, is kind of an iron woman at the back, or throughout her career as well, played in the most games in program history with 83. But she gave a great response to how she's really viewed this league, viewed leagues in the past. So let's have a listen to what she had to say.
Absolutely. You've done the introduction, so here she is.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
Pepperdine,
it. Yes.
Coming from the West Coast. Big season for you as well. Talk a little bit about this season for you and what you can bring to the table with Chicago.
I think this season specifically for me, I was able to showcase what I like to do as a player creatively on and off the ball. So for the Red Stars, whatever position or facility they need me in, I'm going to probably try to translate all that hard work on the field and off the field and the creativity on and off the ball. So whatever capacity they need me in, definitely going to work hard, and I can't wait to get started.
Yeah. Slotted it nicely for Lynn Williams after she graduated from the team. Lots of goals this year. And were you able to kind of pick the brain of her a little bit through the past couple years as she's gone on and played in the league?
Yeah, and that's one of the encouraging parts, is having another teammate in the league, being able to not only be a mentor in that capacity, but also someone that could be your friend and an ally and someone that really is looking out for your best interests, whether it's with, you know, the logistics of everything or even just playing as a player. So it's been really awesome to have Lynn as a mentor and a friend. Yeah.
How much have you paid attention to the Red Stars over the past couple of years?
I mean, to be fair, I've been really focused on my college career just because this would propel me into the next step, which I hope I'm more prepared than not. But I have been watching, and I'm really excited, hopefully, to join Hertz, but I don't know. We'll see with all these trades that are happening, right?
So, for sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
The one thing that's curious, actually, I haven't asked this to anybody yet. This league now has been around 6 years, something that you guys were in high school when this was kind of starting. How cool is it now seeing that this league is hanging around, being successful, and you can now aspire to it as opposed to, you know, hearing it in the past couple of years, like, oh, okay, it's cool, last couple of years of college, but now it's like you can work forward to it all 4 years.
Definitely. I actually remember prior to this league being started, one of the previous leagues that folded, I used to watch FC Gold Pride with Marta, and I remember falling in love with that and saying, wow, I wish I could really make this something that I can aspire to do as my career. So obviously having a league that's been established for this long is something that's very encouraging, and something that it became more of a reality than more of a dream, because you think of these ideas, you think of what you want in life, but then it doesn't become reality until something awesome like the NWSL has been sticking around long enough for you to truly achieve it. So I'm just really excited. I'm really happy that the NWSL has been able to carry on and actually grow the league, and hopefully they'll be able to expand the league like they're trying to do, and continue to keep a really solid foundation for how they're handling everything overall. Yeah.
Okay, so that was Brianna Vasali. JJ, you've spoken about a few of the players that were drafted in the second round. Third round, we'll move on to, I think, you know, I'm not going to pretend, and I will never pretend, that I'm an expert when it comes to the college game. We get very little access of it in the UK, and it's only the real kind of recognised names and the recognised colleges that you get to see, maybe online, or we have the NCAA College Cup that's broadcast sometimes on delayed highlights over here. But there are players, there weren't many overseas players that were drafted this year, were there? Nadia Gomez went to Orlando Pride at pick number 23, looking at Kiana Palacios at number 35 that went to Sky Blue. We'll talk about the fourth round in a minute, but the third round, was there anything that stood out for you there?
Yeah, I liked a couple of picks. Brittany Basinger, I wrote on that Outlook piece on the Women's Soccer Zone website, who kind of fell off a little bit of the track at Penn State, but brings experience both from the U.S. at the U-17 World Cup, at the U-20 World Cup, a steady workhorse at outside back. She was drafted by the Spirit, so a bit of a local product there, kind of staying in the Mid-Atlantic region, going from Penn State to our nation's capital. So I think she could compete for an outside back position there under Jim Gabara. Staying with Washington, we very well, Kieran, could see the first sister combination on the same team in the league, where not only Torrey Huster has been running the show in the midfield for the Spirit for a long time, but little sister Maddie got drafted this year, which she played in the Spirit reserves for a couple seasons, which I thought personally is pretty cool. It's nice to see a little bit of lineage now going on down. And then to wrap it out, Zoe Goralski, I was impressed with her and her career at UCLA, and actually she got picked again by Chicago, and she has another interesting little story, Kieran, that in a moment we'll listen to, but she has not only experience watching the team back when they were in the WPS days, but she also played for the side, which I think is kind of funny enough, but she'll explain that in a minute. But it's nice to see someone that kind of came through the system with one club, which obviously we don't really have like a full academy system, and then you translate right into the pro team, as opposed to where here in the U.S. you do that in the youth ranks, you go to college, and then maybe if you're lucky you come back. But yeah, she kind of goes full circle with the Red Stars.
Yeah, definitely. We'll hear from her, and I think she was the Chicago Red Stars' penultimate pick on the day, so what we might be worth doing is we'll hear from her. And we'll play some audio from Rory Dames as well. I know you spoke to him, so he can give a little bit of an overview as to how he felt his day went. So we'll hear from Zoe, and then you'll hear from Rory Dames.
Can you talk about being drafted?
Yeah, I'm really excited to get to Chicago. I'm already in Chicago, but go back to Chicago. I'm from there, so being able to return home, I'm awesome. Really excited to get started.
What can you take away from your experience at UCLA as you head to Chicago?
UCLA is an amazing place to play soccer. We play the best soccer, I think. Like technique-wise, style-wise, and our training environment is very intense and very hard, and we get to play with national team players that are coming in and out constantly, so being able to do that, I'm really confident going into training camp. Yeah.
Someone from the area, did you have a chance to watch Chicago in person?
Yes,
before?
I grew up going to games, and then I also was able to play when they were semi-pro. I was able to play with them in high school,
really?
It's kind of full circle, yeah.
I'm curious, actually, yeah. Because Brianna Vasali was a fan of FC Gold Pride before, because she grew up from the area. So
yes.
What's your favorite memory growing up watching the Red Stars?
Well, I mean, going with my family, like, we're a huge soccer family. My younger sister plays. My parents are now obsessed soccer parents. So going, like, as a family to games and being able to see, like, in Chicago, having the soccer culture be so big. And, yeah, it's just an amazing place to play soccer, so I'm excited.
I read on your bio that you're kind of an iron woman on the field.
Yes,
you played in 82 straight matches to finish out your career. What does that mean to you as a player that you have that responsibility going on the field, but you're never coming off?
I mean, it's kind of just a mindset, like in a fitness mindset. I've been doing that my whole career kind of thing, so being able to, like, have the longevity and have the fitness to do that. It's just a lot of like training and preparing, and if you do the work, you're able to do it on the field. So
where do you see yourself fitting into Dean's system?
Rory, we go way back. So I think he knows how I like to play soccer and my style. I'm kind of just, I like to run. It's kind of just what I do. So I think fitting into that with all the players around me, I know that I used to play with Vanessa, all of them, so kind of having them like wheel and deal, and I can just make some runs would be awesome. Yeah.
Wait, Rory, overall satisfied with what you got today in the draft?
Yeah. We picked up some players that fell a little bit lower than we didn't know that they would be there. So, yeah, I mean, I would say it worked out great for us.
When you got a goalkeeper in Boyd, you got a defender in Gibson, Cal connection there. What did you see out of their play this season that prompted you to go get them?
I think Emily, we had Emily rated in our top three goalkeepers that was on our board. I think the biggest thing with Emily, besides her size, is that she's young. She has a huge upside. She's going to be training in with, you know, one of the best goalkeepers in the world, and Alyssa and Michelle, and she's really good with her feet. And we need our goalkeepers being good with their feet is going to be important for us. And then Indigo, you know, I thought Indigo would have gone in the first round. So, you know, similar to Katie Naughton, I think where people, you bring him in and are not sure, and people thought we picked Katie too high, and Katie's turned out to be a really good professional center back. I think people let Indigo too low. I think Indigo's going to be a really good center back too. So we've added a little bit of depth in that position. So
is that something that started to become a little bit too much of a theme that people are thinking, oh, okay, so some players are not getting drafted early on, they're falling, but that's because they may be thinking about coming to the league, maybe not. Is that something that's not really much of the case, and do you mind going on that a little bit?
I can only speak for myself, but I was never concerned with her not going overseas. I mean, we did our research on her, but you know, I mean, even the people that picked Casey Murphy's right today, I mean, if they're of value, same thing with us with Morgan. Morgan can be in France for a year, 2 years, 3 years, but she still has value at some point. She's only 24 years old. So we don't get caught up with that stuff. We wouldn't pick somebody in a position, we wouldn't pick somebody in a slot where that person could potentially go overseas unless we felt comfortable that it was the best player on the board and we already had that position covered within our team. But if we needed to cover, you know, we wouldn't have picked somebody at 15 who potentially could go overseas and let Emily slide and maybe lose out on Emily.
Zoe Gorelski, kind of an interesting story. She ended up playing for you guys back in her youth days, and also she said WPSL Elite as well.
Yeah.
What was it that kind of clicked with her back then, and what can she bring to the table now after getting a little bit more seasoning at the college level?
Yeah, well, I actually coached Zoe's sister, her who's U18, so the Gorelowski family is a good family. You know, the biggest thing with Zoe is her versatility. She can play as a 7, an 11, a 2, a 3. She's got really good pace. She's not afraid to run at players and take people on, as you saw in the NCAA tournament this year. She can play on either side of the field. So I think you know me too. Once I get past specific needs, I look for most versatile players that I can. And I think in Bree also has some versatility to her, and Zoe has some versatility to her. So it's not that they have to come in and try to make one spot on our team that a chance. They could play multiple positions, which if you start losing players for FIFA dates or World Cup qualifying or a World Cup next year, and your rosters get smaller, rather than trying to hope you can find people, you have versatile players in your group.
State of the roster right now, how satisfied are you, and what pieces do you think may have to be kind of shifted around to make everything work?
Well, I mean, after this trade we did today, we have 20 contracted players, and that doesn't include Michelle, who we picked 11th last year, and it doesn't include any of the people that we picked today. So I would say it is going to be ultra competitive to earn a contract on our roster. And we told the players last year at the end, you know, we don't promise anybody anything for next year. We've been pretty loyal and committed to that group, and we've had a decent run with them, but we haven't been able to get quite where we want to go. So we've got to shake it up again and bring in some energy and some young and different personalities and perspective and have another go.
With the Red Stars fans hinging on what's going to be happening with this trade, what can they expect coming to Chicago this season?
They should be very, very excited. When all of the trade pieces play out and it's all done, I think they're going to be really excited.
So round four, JJ, we get into the kind of last 10 picks. Talk about that one, because this is where players are probably sweating a little bit more. They, you know, there's however many players enter, there's a lot of players that enter and declare themselves available for the draft. 30 players have gone. You then get to that final 10. Players are starting to, as I say, probably bite the nails, get a little bit nervous. Are they going to be professional soccer players in the NWSL or aren't they? Talk about the fourth round and how that went down.
Yeah, well, you know, a couple interesting ones. You talked about internationals. You already mentioned Kiana Palacios going to Sky Blue. Celia Jimenez Delgado played for Spain at the 2015 World Cup, which I thought that was pretty awesome. She played her collegiate soccer, or finished up her career, I should say, at the University of Alabama. So kind of a late one there. I know Vlatko Ananovsky loves his possession style, short passing type player, so she'll fit in well with that system. In fact, pretty light day for Seattle outside of that Yael Averbush trade. That was the only pick that they had on the afternoon. But yeah, it was dominated by North Carolina at the back end. Morgan Reed, basically all she has to do is just take a short drive from Duke over to carry North Carolina to compete for a back position. Got to give a shout out to I didn't go to the school because, quite frankly, I'm never going to have the grades, or never did have the grades to get in. But Carlin Hudson out of Yale University, I broadcast their soccer for the past couple of years, so glad to see that she got picked. Ryan Williams as well at a TCU. But also, the real steal for me, Kieran, we had a chance quickly to catch up with her, Joe Boyles out of North Carolina. Now, this is a kid right here that she had a very injury-riddled career. Now, she was a very highly touted recruit, played for the U.S. at the Under-17 World Cup back in 2012, then gets to North Carolina, has a blinder of a freshman year, goes down with injuries. Very stop-start getting back onto the field over the next couple of years and really started to pick it back up this year. But she is someone that is, and I know, again, it's been said a lot, technically gifted. You know, you see the game really well, but that's exactly what she is. She's dynamic. She's not afraid to continue her runs at defenders and take them on and, quite frankly, make them look silly at times. And also, this is a player that's also grown a little bit throughout the last couple of years, kind of came in as a little bit of a, not to say smaller midfielder, but she's definitely matured both physically as well as mentally on the field. And, you know, with the Boston Breakers, they need help, obviously, all over the field. And someone that is fearless but has a nice little sense of humor about herself, I think she's got a real good chance. She joked when she was on stage getting her photos taken. She was like, so what do I do with my hands, and start raising them up Ricky Bobby-esque from Talladega Nights. So I gave her a little bit of shtick for that one, but fair play to her, because again, like you said, you're sweating around all day wondering if you're going to get picked. She gets picked at 32nd. Morgan Reed, I think it was the last one, at 38th, so you're waiting 3+ hours to hear your name called. So fair play to her, having a little bit of fun with it. And like I said, had a chance to speak with her briefly about her kind of injury-riddled career, but what she's taken from it and what she can bring to the Boston Breakers.
Well, without further ado, let's hear from her.
This is possible with my injury, so I'm just so blessed to be drafted and go up to Boston. It's a beautiful, beautiful city, and I cannot wait to get out there and seize the opportunity.
What can you take away from your experience in North Carolina as you head to Boston?
I've been in North Carolina my whole life, so I'm really excited for a new adventure, new city, everything that Anton and the UNC staff has, instilled in me, grind every day. I'm going to take that same grind mentality up to Boston with me, and I'm a huge Tom Brady fan, so excited to be part of the Patriots fam, but I'm very excited and truly blessed.
Injuries throughout your college career, have you had time to kind of reflect on how things have gone and take away some things that have helped you get to where you are right now?
Oh, for sure. I think, I'm to kind of put it, I'm kind of not grateful for the injuries, but I'm so blessed to see what they brought out in me and the people around me and getting the people around me that love me and care for me and only want me to succeed, and finding Chris Gores and him getting me back healthy for my senior season. I just am forever grateful for him and all the people in my life who've helped me.
At the same time, you've got a lot of international experience as well. Mm-hmm. Played for the World Cup team in 12 at the U-17s.
Yep.
What have you learned from that in addition to your college game that's going to help you at this level?
I think being thrown into the national team at such a young age, I think you really learn to grow up quickly. So I think I matured pretty young, and I think I'm that experience and just being traveling and being an international and being through with the U.S. program as a youngster, I think it definitely has helped me just become mature and roll with it, learn to roll with things, and I'm just so excited.
Okay, so JJ, we've talked about rounds 1, 2, 3, and 4. We've got some audio. We've heard from Rory Dames. We've got some audio from Denise Reddy, and we've also got some audio from Paul Riley as well. So we'll hear from them in a moment. But if you were to look at the day as a whole, putting you on the spot, we've spoken about the fact that Washington Spirit had a lot of picks today. The Chicago Red Stars had a lot of picks today. Players, teams like Portland were a little bit more quiet. The rain were relatively quiet. We saw the Utah Royals make their debut at the draft. Who do you think were the winners? I'm not going to ask who the winners and losers are, because I don't ever really like to think of any team as losers when you're drafting young talent out of the colleges. But who had a good day and who maybe didn't fill the pieces that maybe they needed and will need to do a little bit of work in the lead up to the new season?
Well, I'm going to ask you to kind of make an adjunct to that. Is it going to be with trades or without trades?
Well, Let's do with trade, seeing as we feel we know which players are going to be coming in.
I mean, quite frankly, I said Sky Blue, I think they've done very well as a whole since Denise Reddy has come in. She's turned over this roster. She wants to make it her identity, and I think this is a shout to the players that are there right now. The last couple of years, you getting a little bit relevant. That's over, quite frankly. It's time to show up or shut up at this point. So she's brought in talent all over the field, obviously, with the trades coming in. That's going to help things a lot more, too. But I think of their draft picks as a whole, we mentioned Abam at the top, Dorsey at the top, Pierre-Louis, good athletic outside back. Casey Murphy, she's going to be another one of those players. All she has to do is change locker rooms because she's staying right at Rutgers. That's where Sky Blue plays their home game, so she'll feel right at home there. And she's also going to test Kayleen Sheridan because, quite frankly, Kieran, I think Casey Murphy has the stuff to not only be a good professional, but I think has something to prove to be at the national team level because she's got a lot of talent in between the pipes. So I think they did very well. I think the Courage, they did what they had to do today. I'm not going to say that they're winners or losers, but you asked who got the job done. They're looking to fill some roles. I know Paul Riley was very excited about bringing Franny Krause into the fold, who another talented striker out of Penn State. Also, they got some depth in there as well, so they're going to be looking pretty good. Chicago, they did, again, what they had to do. This is a team that's chock full of contracts at the moment. There's going to be a lot of fighting going on for those 20 spots in the field, and I'm very curious to see how that camp is going to turn out because that could be one of the most competitive preseasons that we have ever seen in this league. I mean, the players that they brought in from this draft alone, the players that they traded for, the players that they have returning, my goodness, Rory Daines has got some work to do. And then to answer the question about what teams didn't do enough, I don't think in essence there's teams that didn't do enough per se. I would like to see maybe Boston take a couple more risks in some of their drafts. I don't think they drafted badly today, but you think, okay, so they got McCaskill, you expect that. Elizabeth Wenger out of Georgetown, she was very, very late on deciding to come in. Might have been a couple other midfielders or defenders in there that they could have gone to. In fact, actually, they left Indigo Gibson on the table, who was an All-American. Not to say Wenger wasn't either, but I thought Gibson might bring something more that she can't. I think Boston may have slipped a little bit. The Dash, in fairness to them, they were going on that trade. And good to see, by the way, Vera Paul spoke to her a little bit. She seems very excited to get things going. It will be interesting how she translates over to this league. And maybe, from your perspective as seeing another European coach, but one that's coming from the mainland here to the U.S., I'm very curious how she is going to get on with her business with Houston because she also has a bit of a makeshift lineup. But I think overall, those are kind of my teams that got the job done and the teams that might still have something yet to prove.
Yeah, well, you mentioned there, it's well led in, mate. You mentioned Sky Blue and North Carolina, and we've got some audio from, as I mentioned, Denise Reddy and Paul Riley. One player that kind of cropped up a few times on social media, I'd be interested to get your views, was Rachel Corbo, who's obviously sister of Daphne Corbo, who plays for Sky Blue. She declared herself for the draft quite late. She went unselected. Were you surprised by that, or are we essentially thinking that she's going to come over to Europe and play here?
She's coming over to Europe to play. I mean, we saw the last sheet of players that declared themselves eligible at just before 11 p.m. local time. And I was like, really? She actually put her name in? I didn't think a second in the world that she was going to be coming. I know, obviously, Daphne tried over with Manchester City, had a very good first year, but then injuries / other players that the team brought in kind of left her out. And because she had the rights with Sky Blue, it came back and it's clearly worked out in her favor. But I never thought for a second Rachel Corbo. It's not to say that she wouldn't do well in this league. She would, but I think her interests were well vested in Europe as opposed to domestically.
Okay, thanks for clearing that one up. Well, look, let's go back to what I was saying earlier. We've got audio from Denise Reddy and Paul Riley. So let's hear from both of them about their draft days.
At 4 and 5, which seemed to be kind of where the draft maybe was going to take a turn, did you know who you were thinking about when you traded up for 4, and just what about the two players you got?
Sure. We had a few pieces that we definitely wanted to fill our roster, so we traded up to 4 to make sure that, you know, we're kind of covered. We had an idea of the first 3 picks. I think it was very easy to read who everyone's going to pick in the first 3 rounds. So from then on, it's preference, I think, for a bunch more players and, you know, who needs and stuff. So didn't really want to rely or take the chance that we wouldn't actually get the players we wanted specifically. And then, you know, with our trade, we got 6, which made it, you know, we got exactly what we needed in the first round.
ABAM is on record as saying she may go to Europe. Have you spoken to her?
I have. I think a lot of these young players, when they get, I did it, I played in Europe, I understand. But I want players that are going in the first round high. I always say if there's an opportunity for you to make an impact in the most competitive league in the world, I'm not saying it's the best, but it's the most competitive. I was like, I need you to think that over before you go over. Because when a lot of players go over, it's to gain experience so they can be an impact player in this league. So I kind of threw that out. This wasn't something that was definite for her. She was thinking about it. She was very honest about it. So I feel like we're in a good place.
When you evaluate potential acquisitions, how important is it to have scored hat tricks in World Cup finals?
Depends. Am I recruiting this player as a center back? I mean, of course. Good point. Helps. What?
It's a tough one to follow.
Yeah, it's a tough one to follow.
Do you expect your top 3 picks to be in, or do they have college to finish?
Abam is graduated. Dorsey is going to finish school. She's going to be able to do a little bit of both traveling. You know, at least it's not that far. Back and forth throughout the spring and preseason. So I knew that going in. I spoke with her as well. And then Pierre-Louise, she should be good as well. I think she has some classes. I'm not 100% sure, but I expect her, you know, when we kick off.
Do you feel that you need to fit or finish up and like finalize any more roles on your team, or are you like where your roster's set?
I mean, we've already done some trades prior to even today. So, and when we you know went in on these trade endeavors, they were for specific pieces that we think we needed positionally. You know, from a standpoint also of character. So we're pretty happy after today. You know, on what we have. Very happy.
Just generally speaking, when you think about sort of how these players all fit together within your system, what do you feel like is the overarching takeaway from the players who you've added today?
Well, I think, you know, there's so many players that bring, you know, athleticism or technical. So I think there's small little differences that you look for. One, in a fit in how you want to play. The system you want to play, whether it's a more of a possession style, more of a build-up. And then, you know, for me, it's huge, the character. The character piece is huge. You know, and I do a lot of research. We do a lot of research, my whole team, on talking because, you know, we want an environment. We really feel that the environment that has good people is going to be a successful environment. So that's extremely important for us.
Is that interviewing people they know? I mean, that's a tougher thing to quantify.
It is. But you know, you have people also when you're doing stuff like the draft. There's people that you trust that you've talked to. I mean, when I was in the WPS, I have certain coaches or certain people that know or in there and you trust when they say, because you know they're going to come back to you and want you to draft a player, and if you led me wrong, you know, I'm not going to trust you again. So it's important also. But yeah, you have to trust people as well going into this process, because a lot of it is a gamble in some ways. You know, if they're going to fit, if they're going to, you know, maybe develop in what you think or see.
So
to Paul overall today, your thoughts on the draft. Did you feel the needs that you were looking for, or there's still something that's left out there on the table right now?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we were looking for covering the sixth position. We were looking for a defender, obviously, which we just talked about, and we were looking for some firepower up front. And I think we've got all of those things covered. You know, obviously we have a deep roster from last year, 15, 16 coming back. We haven't made many changes in two or three years now, so the team's built and they've got a good foundation, the group. The heart and the guts of the team has been together for 3 years now, and so it's not an easy squad to make, but there is, you know, there's quite a few we went for a lot of good athletes, and you know, Franny, who was our first pick, you know, she can play in a wing back, she can play in a full back, she can play up front, so she's a little bit more mobile and a little bit more versatile, which I think you need out of a player, you know. And she scored a lot of good goals for Penn State this year. You know, excited to get her. I didn't think she would last to 10, so we were really happy when we got her, you know. And there's a couple other players that we liked in the first 10, but she was one of the, would have been our top choice. Even if we were 3 or 4, that would have been our choice. So really happy we got her. And then it went from there. Becky Rasmussen, I haven't spoke to her yet. She's in Germany at the moment, but there's another player we love. She's a lefty. We don't have a ton of lefties. We have Mary Speck, obviously, the Yale kid, and we have Jaylene Hinkle from the national team. So having another lefty give us some balance in the team is one thing we moaned about most of last year, that we didn't have enough lefties in the squad. So it took care of that one. And another attacking player can play in wide areas, can probably tuck in and play too, but another, you know, for better terminology, a beast, you know what I'm saying. She'll get things done, and she's exciting to watch, and she's a great one-on-one player, and you know, I like that in players. So yeah, I'm excited to get her. And then the last three picks were, you know, positional based, like we talked about. And you know, we got a local kid in Morgan who's a good footballer, good brain. You know, when you're in that area, we get to see the Duke kids, we get to see the UNC kids live every day, well, not every day, but throughout the summer. And I think that's a big help for us, you know, to be able to see these players in action, and you can see the players you want and the players you don't want. And Morgan impressed us when she came into practice, and you know, we're excited to get her there, local kid. And then the other two, obviously, are positional based, TCU and the Yale girl, are there for, you know, positional specific, and hopefully one of them will stick, you know what I'm saying. We'll see.
Obviously this past week has been up and down, a little bit challenging at times, but overall, between that trade, what you've gotten today, do you feel that your roster is in a right space right now, and if so, what are you looking for in the next couple of weeks as we get into preseason?
And obviously, you know, Taylor and Hatchie was a tough week for me. You know, bringing Crystal in was brilliant, but I'm the one who's got to make the phone calls to the other two, and it was a very difficult week. They're great players, and you know, the other side of it is they're both young. It's hard to give up on them so young, and Hatchie's going to be, you know, she's a bona fide goal scorer. Taylor Smith is, it's a tough one to swallow. You know, she came as a walk-on. I mean, when you think some of these kids that didn't make it today, that's where Taylor Smith was a couple of years ago, and now she's on the national team. So, you know, for all of them, you know, anything can happen in this game. But we had to replace Taylor, and we had to replace Hatchie, and obviously Crystal, and the international pick allowed us to bring Yuri back, which is a central defender, which we needed, which meant we didn't really need a central defender today, but probably nobody's figured that out yet. They're probably wondering why we didn't take all defenders, but that's the main reason. So, you know, it was really about getting some pace on the outside, and if you look down the list of those five players, there's a lot of pace, a lot of them are wide players, and that's where I think where we needed help in the draft, and that's what we've got. And got some cover in the six. We got another player coming in from abroad too in the six. So, it went well. I mean, draft's the draft, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who you pick, they got to come in, they got to be fit, and they got to get ready to compete. And you know, the environment's good, and hopefully they'll, you know, somebody will stick and they'll get a contract and live the dream out. You know, that's what the hope is.
So that was Denise Reddy and Paul Riley. JJ, we won't be far off wrapping this one up. We've spoken a lot, we've mentioned a lot of names, we've heard from a lot of players, but you also had an opportunity to get in with a bit of a media scrum, didn't you, with the managing director of operations for the NWSL, Amanda Duffy. Now, I know from previous drafts that we've been to, the commissioner would normally be there, but since the departure of, tell me his name,
Jeff Plush.
Since the departure of Jeff Plush, we haven't had a commissioner for the NWSL. So Amanda Duffy is almost, for want of a better term, been filling in that role in a temporary capacity, but don't seem to have moved any further. But before we play that audio, what did you get out of Amanda Duffy, and how did she come across?
Well, I mean, Amanda Duffy, I've known her since her days running the USLW League, which was a league that before it closed down shop, and I think at the end of the 2015 season, that was the premier second level. It was a summer-based run league, but she took it from being, not to say irrelevant for a while, but it was a second thought, and then built it up into a machine. And remember that 2012 season where there was no top league. I mean, you had some world-class players playing in that league, and she was the one that was leading the operation. So I was not surprised last year when I heard that she was going to be joining the ranks. She's one that deserves to be there. And quite frankly, I know this is a popular opinion, Amanda Duffy should be the commissioner of the league because she's done so much in such short of a time. She had some questions to answer to. A lot of people are wondering, and you'll hear this in a moment, about the status of the Boston Breakers. They're going to wonder about, this schedule was released shortly before coming on to record this, and shortly before the draft, the Players Association said that we never heard a thing about it, amongst other things. I mean, she had to answer some questions that were being put pretty hard pressed on her, but I think she did well enough in at least answering some of the questions. Now, I didn't have a chance to hear all of the time that she spent with the media because at the end of the day, this is about the players that are getting drafted. There were still players that were getting drafted at that time, so went off and heard what some of the players that had to say. But yeah, you know, she had to bring together some light, also talked about the Lifetime deal a little bit. And yeah, you know, it was enlightening. I know a lot of people are going to be writing some stuff about it. But yeah, these are interesting times, Kieran, in this league. Obviously, it's still unprecedented because we've never had a league that's gone past 5 years. So with that being said, nothing's ever perfect. And there are, while a lot of good things in this league, there are a lot of things that need work done.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Well, look, let's do enough of the talking. Let's hear from Amanda Duffy and what she had to say to the media that were assembled in Philadelphia.
Commissioner coming along.
Right now, it's still an active search, and we continue to work with U.S. Soccer and our owners and board to make sure we have that role defined and how we want to have it positioned going forward.
Is it important to have that in place for opening day?
I think right now we're in a good place with being able to address what our issues are right now and really looking ahead in terms of the stability, the growth that we want to have as a league, and the development we want to have, not just a league with the players, but a league as a league office and our direction overall. So we're happy with that, and certainly still in a growth mode, and we'll continue to build out the league office and the roles that will be there.
Talk about being in a growth mode. What are the next steps in terms of expansion, and to what degree have the Utah Royals set the bar for what you expect any future teams to be?
Utah Royals are a great addition to NWSL. We couldn't be happier with them being a part of our league. Certainly are setting a standard and pace that is unprecedented just in terms of the expansion process, that negotiation, and then everything they've been able to accomplish in the short period of time that they've been a part of NWSL. North Carolina Courage also did a tremendous job in coming into NWSL late on the calendar, but executing in a wonderful way in their inaugural season. We're excited that Utah are part of NWSL. We're excited about the resources, the stadium, and just the overall commitment financially and otherwise to make sure NWSL is competing on and off the field.
If an ownership group in another market, especially in a big market, whether in the U.S. or Canada, comes along and says, we want to do this, these are the resources we have, they aren't quite what Utah or Portland has done, but this is what we've got, you know, what would you say to them?
I think we look at expansion, it's there's a couple aspects to it. We want to make sure we do it at the right pace and with the right groups that are in markets that are going to allow that team and position the league to be successful and for long-term growth and stability. So when we evaluate all of those aspects, we're excited about the markets and groups that we've been in conversations with. We do think it's an important piece. We don't want to do it too quickly. That's going to dilute the talent that truly is the most competitive league in the world. But we are going to continue. We are continuing to have really positive conversations with several prospects.
Is the league currently...
the candidate, Juan Martino's idea of all new expansion teams in MLS having to pledge to have an NWSL team. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think in WSL right now we need to have a discussion with our board of directors and just evaluate the candidates. Certainly all candidates have a lot of wonderful ideas that they've positioned, and we as a group need to determine what's best for the league in terms of support in the upcoming election.
Just generally with that remark, do you think that's good to have a tie-in with the two leagues, with the clubs?
In our current structure, where we do have teams that have shared ownership with, whether it's MLS or, in the case of North Carolina Courage, a shared ownership with USL, it's a model that's proven to be successful. So see the value in that thought process, but we're not restricting this league to solely ownerships that already have an existing MLS or USL team in place.
Is the league currently operating and or funding the Boston Breakers?
Currently, it's business as usual with the Boston Breakers, and we're going to continue to work with them and their ownership to make sure that we remain a 10-team league and viable and moving forward in a professional and sophisticated way in 2018.
So is the 2017 ownership group still calling the shots and funding the team then?
We're currently actively working with the existing ownership in a business as usual capacity.
For those of us who don't know what business as usual is, can you explain that?
That is with the Boston Elite Soccer LLC as owners of the Boston Breakers. As everyone understands, with the front office and team, that everyone knows the Breakers to be.
Can you talk about any key performance indicators for 2018 that you'd like the league to hit?
Certainly from the ratings, that's always going to be number one in our partnership with A&E and Lifetime. We need to really push our television ratings to show growth in that area, not just to show the strength of the league, but also to strengthen the partnership that we have with A&E and their continued investment and relationship with NWSL and our joint venture work with NWSL Media. So with the TV ratings, and of course we talked about league growth and what that means on the expansion side and positioning NWSL. It's been several years since we had a true expansion team. So want to position us to be in the right place that does have that long-term stability.
In terms of television, I'm curious what you learned from that first year and what do you think is going to be the biggest change for people to see in year two?
Well, I think some of them are small, some of them are going to be a little bit more noticeable and obvious, but starting with the small, we certainly, from a venue perspective, understand the need and importance of having TV-ready, viable broadcast venues that our teams are playing in and that we approach week in and week out promoting those games in the best way possible. That's going to come through the form of how we schedule our games this year and being able to promote upcoming games through each of the games in a weekend. And then also with the time and other areas that we think are going to give the broadcast the best opportunity to attract the most viewers.
Going forward, what are your plans for improving player quality of life in the league or working with the Players Association?
We look forward to working with the Players Association. The players are the most valuable piece of NWSL. We have the top talent in the world here in this league right now, and we need to make sure as a league that we're continuing to take steps that enable them to stay in NWSL and be able to live as a professional athlete as an NWSL player.
So that was Amanda Duffy answering some difficult questions, but as JJ said, doing the best that she could with the answers that she's got. But I think that is probably a good way to end it, JJ, unless there's any other notes that you want to make on the draft day.
What I will say is for those that may be a little bit curious about how this goes, there were 160, 170 players that put their name in for this draft. This day does not mean that all things are said and done. We mentioned Taylor Smith did not get drafted, yet here she is on the national team and starring as an outside back. A lot of these players that did not get picked today, and for those that may be listening, friends, you have opportunities. There are going to be open tryouts that are going to be coming out. Their coaches are always going to be looking to bring in players to give the first team a bit of a run. And you never know, some of these players that didn't get drafted today They could very well still find their way onto the first team, whether it's this year, whether it's down the road. So for those that are curious, no, this is not the end-all be-all for a lot of these talented players. There's still opportunities, and if it's not here, then it's going to be somewhere down the road in other places in other countries. But yeah, I'm excited to see what this group has to offer to the league. As remember, we're now 2 months away from season number six kicking off.
Yeah, weekend of the 24th and 25th of March. Preseason camps start on the 19th of February, so starts earlier this season. So you haven't got very long to wait, guys. But yeah, JJ, I think we'll wrap it up there, mate. I really appreciate all the stuff that you did in Philadelphia. Would love to have been there with you, but you know, unfortunately have to prioritise sometimes, and unfortunately couldn't make it out there. But did a grand job, my friend, and thanks very much for everything that you did.
Well, unfortunately, I've also missed a couple of key events here and there as well. Things turn out the way they turn out, but I think we did a killer job with this. And, you know, I'm looking forward to, like I said, the season to come and hopefully the next time they make it over the pond.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we appreciate everyone that followed us on social media while we were tweeting out the pics and getting interviews and taking photos. So we really, really do appreciate the support and the following that you gave us on social media over the course of the day. Thank you for downloading this podcast. We always appreciate you taking the time to listen to us ramble on about God knows what. If you want to contact us, any feedback is always welcome. You can do so on Twitter on @WosoZone or on email on WosoZone@gmail.com. You can read any articles that we've been putting up or listen to the podcast on womenssoccerzone.com. You can also download it on iTunes. So until next time, guys, thanks again. We'll catch up with you soon. Take care and bye-bye.